Welcome to our Assistant Principals webinar series. Today is Monday, May the 6th, 2019, and my name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. Today's topic for Assistant Principals webinar series is Read, Helping Children Become Summer Bookworms. Our speaker for today is Dr. James Kemp, who is a professor of education at Harvard University's Graduate School of Education. Dr. Kim, welcome to our Assistant Principals webinar series. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Aaron, for the invitation and opportunity to speak this afternoon.
Well, can you tell the NAESP universe a little bit more about yourself?
I think the most important thing I want to tell our colleagues and friends today is that I'm currently a professor of education at Harvard University, and I'm a literacy scholar, but I most strongly self-identify as a classroom teacher. I started my career in education as a middle school history teacher, and I noticed that even in middle school, lots of kids struggle to read, and so I made a decision to study literacy and to find programs that were evidence-based and that could work at large scale. And that's what I want the audience to know, that I'm a teacher at heart.
Great. So everybody's coming to the webinar series as muted. And if you have any questions for Dr. Kim, what we're going to do today is we're going to put those questions in our chat box. Again, we're going to use our chat box for questions for Dr. Kim. Dr. Kim, I'm going to hand this presentation over to you, and thank you again for being here.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to just walk everyone through the slides, and hopefully what I'll do is tell you a story about READS, which is the name of the program. And READS stands for Reading Enhances Achievement During Summer. So that's the name of the program. And the inspiration for this program is really these three folks. These are my three kids. That's Selah, who's in fourth grade, John to the right, who's in third grade, and Isaac, who is in second grade. So I'm also speaking to you as a parent who's very concerned about helping kids read outside of school and preventing summer reading loss. So if you want to learn more about some of the personal background behind the program, you can go to that website at the bottom. So let me zoom out a bit and talk to you about some challenges we're facing in the 21st century in literacy. One is that, as many of you know, the gap in reading skills between low and middle income children is large at school entry and expands during the elementary grades. And by the start of high school, low income kids are nearly 5 years behind high income students in reading comprehension. And although summer loss contributes to the socioeconomic status gap in reading, a lot of recent large-scale center-based programs, so where kids are going to summer school, for example, have produced null effects on reading comprehension, meaning that kids in these programs appear to do no better than kids who don't receive any kind of program. And so we created READS as a program to create summer bookworms, kids who would read independently. And what I'm going to focus on this afternoon is the role of engagement in summer reading in three studies of READS. The first study I'm going to talk to you about was published in 2008 in Scientific Studies of Reading. And that study focuses on the role of teacher and parent scaffolding to support kids' engagement. I'm then going to talk to you about a study that we conducted in 2013-14, and that's published in 2016 in a journal called the Journal of Research on Educational Effectiveness. And in this study, we were trying to measure the long-term effects of READS. And the last study I'm going to talk to you about was conducted in 2015-16. We published this in 2017 in Reading Research Quarterly. And it is called How Teacher Adaptations to an Evidence-Based Summer Literacy Program Can Enhance Engagement. So one of the things you should know about READS is that even though it's trying to promote independent reading in the summer months, educators implement reading comprehension activities at the end of the school year to give kids a good launch into summer reading. So educators play a very important role, as do parents in READS. So let me provide some goals and definitions so everyone has a shared understanding of what I'm talking about when I say things like the READS project mission is to improve reading comprehension by fostering children's engagement with books over the summer. So really the mission of READS is to improve reading comprehension. While we think decoding is important and fluency is important, ultimately, we want to improve children's ability to read connected text with understanding, and we want to foster their engagement. with books over the summer. When I say engagement or engaged, I mean that children are engaged with books when they are motivated to read them on their own, and they read in ways that increase their comprehension. So not just picking up a book and flipping through the pages, but really being engaged so that you can learn from the text that you're reading. So the theory behind Reads can be summed up by the ABCs of the program. We think we can remedy summer reading loss by providing children with access to books at home, books that are well matched to each child's reading level and interest, and comprehension routines that children learn at the end of the school year in classroom lessons, and that can transfer to home reading during the summer. So we want to teach kids a routine in school that they can use at home. And the way that you can think about routine is like a fitness routine. You want to help kids think of reading as something that requires you to do fitness activities so you can build your reading skills and muscles during the summer months. Interestingly enough, I started doing the work on Reads because of what I observed as a classroom teacher. I noticed that when I taught U.S. history as a seventh grade teacher, a lot of my kids seemed to fall behind in the summer months and forgot everything they learned in sixth grade. I also noticed that some of my kids came back knowing a lot about history because they had gone to museums and they had read a lot on their own. So way back in 2004, I developed a pilot study to test the Reads idea. And basically what I found is that there were stronger effects with older children in grades 3 and 5 than grades 1 and 2. And the reason we think that happened is because in grades 3 and 5, most kids can decode words independently and on their own, but they need a lot of rigorous practice to get better at comprehension. So we decided to focus on the upper elementary grades. Then in 2006, we did a study just in fourth grade, and we found that the ABCs of Reads did have a positive impact on the IELTS tested basic skills of the ILOT. The IELTS tested basic skills is a standardized comprehension test, and it's norm reference, meaning you can tell how kids are doing relative to kids in the nation. I've been told by Aaron that there are participants from all around the country in Canada. No matter what state you're in, you probably know there are these end of grade tests that assess kids' reading comprehension. That's what the ITBS is like. What we are interested in knowing in my first study that I'm going to share with you today is, do the results replicate? Could we get the same results? And why did the program work? Do you notice how Reads has a lot of moving parts? There are books. There's books that are matched to kids' reading level and interest. There are comprehension lessons. Well, which of these core components seems to matter the most? So we conducted a study. This is study one, where we were looking at the role of teacher engagement, teacher and parent scaffolding in fostering engagement. What we did in this study is we had 4 experimental conditions where we randomly assign the students and teachers to 1 of 4 conditions. Because we're randomly assigning students and teachers to 1 of 4 conditions, if there's any difference at the end of the study, it's because of the program, not because more motivated students picked a particular program or the more motivated teachers picked the program. Basically, what random assignment ensures is a fair evaluation and a fair test of the program. If you look at these 4 boxes, you'll see in green, match books, teacher scaffolding, and family support. And that's the Reads program. Kids got access to books, the books were matched, teachers taught lessons, and parents did a simple activity, and family members did a simple activity to support summer reading. Now, you may be asking, what would have happened if we just gave the kids the match books? Is books enough relative to the control group that gets nothing? So on the far left, you'll see that in the yellow box, there's a match books and match books only condition. What about if we just gave match books and fluency training? We didn't even do comprehension scaffolding. Would that be enough? So we had that second yellow box. And then way over on the far right, we had a control group so we could compare each of the conditions to a group of kids who received nothing. Okay, what we're trying to do in this study is answer 2 questions. One, given that Reads has many moving parts, which parts are the key levers of change? I'm sure many of you who serve as assistant principals would say to me, you know, Jimmy, if all we have to do is give books, it would make this program much easier to implement. There's no teacher training. There's no family involvement. We just have to give kids books. So we wanted to know if you needed all components of the program or if just one of these components was enough. And number two, we wanted to know what is most effective and cost effective. Certainly, if it just requires books and you don't have to implement teacher training, it's also a more inexpensive program. So those are the two questions, and here's what we did in this first study. I want you to pretend that you are, or assume that you are a child in our study who is a third, fourth, or fifth grader. Let's just pick third grade because we did the study with third, fourth, fifth graders. And if you're a third grader, you're going to get these five wonderful narrative texts that are books that you want to read and can read. And then you're going to get five informational texts. And if you receive the Reads program, your teacher is going to teach you how to complete this reading postcard. And what you're going to get in the Reads program, in the books and teacher scaffolding and family engagement, is your teacher is going to teach you to write down the title of the book. You're going to be taught to do this checklist where number two, you indicate whether you finished the book, how many times you read the book, and then your teacher is going to teach you a series of lessons and how to use five comprehension strategies, how to reread, ask questions, make connections, make predictions, and summarize. And then they're also going to teach you to tell someone in your family what the book was about and to read aloud your favorite passage twice. You're supposed to ask your family member, did I read more smoothly? Did I know more words? Did I read with more expression? And then you get a family signature, family member signature. What's important about this postcard is we're trying to help kids engage with text, to read and to think about what they're reading, to use these general strategies and to read aloud to focus on fluency activities. If you got randomly assigned to the books plus fluency condition, you receive the same lessons but no training in comprehension strategies. And then if you're randomly assigned to the books only condition, all you are told is to fill in this postcard. What's the title? Did you finish the book? How many times did you read? Is there anything you want to tell us about? Yao Ming, for those of you who don't know, was a Chinese basketball player who played for the NBA Houston Rockets. Okay, what did we find in the study? What we found is the following. On the y-axis, you'll see these numbers that go from 0 to 0.14. Those are called effect sizes, and that tells me the difference between the group of children who received some part of Reads and the control group. We use effect sizes in research because it allows us to make apples-to-apples comparisons. Just to help you understand an effect size, you can think of an effect size of 0.10, a 1/10 of a standard deviation difference, is basically the effect of evidence-based literacy programs in general. What we found in the study is that in the first blue bar, the difference between the kids who got the books and the control was small. It was 0.02. It was essentially no difference. For the kids who got the books and the oral reading scaffolding, or the BORS, the books and fluency, that difference was also small. It was 0.06 and was really indistinguishable from no difference. So basically, if we give kids books or just do books and fluency, we don't really see a difference between how those kids perform and the control group. However, for the kids who receive the books, the oral reading comprehension scaffolding, they did much better than the kids who received no treatment at all. And that difference of 0.12 standard deviations replicates the results from our previous study. The other thing that's important about this study is when we looked at the two teacher scaffolding conditions and combined the BORS and the BORCS to the no teacher scaffolding, which was the control group and the books only, the teacher scaffolding kids did better than the no teacher scaffolding. Do you know what I think this figure tells us? It tells us some good news about American education. It tells us that teachers and good teaching matters. Even in a summer program where we're trying to promote independent, engaged summer reading, what teachers do at the end of the school year can make that program much more. So after this first study, we had a couple questions. The questions that we had were, one, are there long-term effects of readings? I didn't mention this in the previous slides, but basically we administered the ITBS in the fall, right after the summer when the kids had experienced the program and had come back to school. What would the effects be 9 months later? Would those positive effects persist? And number two, what if we changed the comprehension routine? Did the did the results replicate at scale? In other words, what if we change the comprehension lessons to focus less on strategies, which really don't teach kids much about the content of the book, to something that was more content rich? So what we did is we took this little picture here, which is called a theory of change, and we said, let's keep the access to match books. Let's keep the idea that teacher scaffolding and family support matters, but this time, let's have teacher scaffolding of a much more content-rich comprehension routine. And then let's see if the amount of scaffolded summer reading not only leads to more fall reading achievement, but also reading achievement 9 months later. So in study two, we asked the question, are there long-term effects of reads at scale? And what we did here is that we blocked teachers and students by homeroom, and we randomly assigned them to a control group or to the reads treatment group. This was the largest study I had ever done of reads. It was in 59 schools in North Carolina, 39 high poverty schools and 20 moderate poverty schools. And it involved over 6,000 children in grades 2 and 3 and 463 teachers. Let me just say that at the end of the study, I was really tired because it was a heavy lift. So what are these new content-oriented or content-rich lessons that we use? What we did is we used text structure to help children transfer comprehension routines from the school text that the teachers had used in their reading lessons to the home text that the kids would get in order to help them understand the main idea. You know, when you look at what kids really struggle with in the elementary grades, one thing they struggle with is getting the main idea from a text. So let me explain to you what these content-oriented lessons look like. Have you ever read Click, Clack, Moo? This is one of my favorite board books. Let me read it to you and think about what you are learning here. Dear Farmer Brown, the barn is very cold at night. We'd like some electric blankets. Sincerely, the cows. Duck was a neutral party, so he brought the ultimatum to the cows. Well, what you notice is that all narrative texts, like Click, Clack, Moo, have a story grammar. There are central characters, a setting, a problem, and a resolution. And what we did is we wanted to help kids learn that every narrative text has a story grammar, and that you could use that to figure out the main idea. We're going to provide clues about story grammar with every book. So we used a three-chapter narrative text called I See Some Questions That Are Appearing in My Chat Box. I'm going to, you know, just keep this really informal. I'll do my best to do my presentation, but also answer some of the questions that I see that are now starting to pop up. The program is pretty much available to everyone. It's on my website, readslab.org. It's on my Harvard University website. And if you go there, you can look up you can get more information on the materials. If you go to any of my papers that are listed in the back, I actually include all the materials from postcards and so forth to implement the program. So, you can see here that there's a story impression for a book called Look at Jeremy Mead. So in our school lessons, we use this three chapter informational text. And what we do in this book is before we read, the teachers read these words and they're listed in the order they appear in the text. The words are anchored to the narrative text structure. So they introduce the kids to the main characters and the settings. And we tell the kids, use the words in the order that they appear to make a prediction about the book. Then during reading, the teacher reads aloud and asks questions. And after reading, tells the kids, hey, was your prediction accurate or was it inaccurate? So what we're trying to do here is not to teach reading comprehension strategies, but to actually use text structure, the fact that narrative texts have a story grammar, to help kids engage more with the book and to use that story grammar when they read their books at home. For the three informational text lessons, we taught the kids that informational books have a text structure. And whenever an author like Gail Gibbons writes a book about animals, she might describe what they look like, what they do, what they eat, how they hunt, where they live, how they raise their babies, and what dangers do they face. It turns out that all the informational books that we use in the Reads program, the authors who write those informational books about animals always address those questions. So we teach the kids about the expository text structure description and how in animal books, feature the authors will often try to describe these features of animals. Similarly, when an author writes a book about nature, they describe these following features of nature. And for biographies, they describe these questions over here on the right. What was this person's childhood like? What was his or her background? Who are the other important people in their life? Why is she famous? So what we did in the three informational text lessons is we used three types of informational books, books about animals, nature, and biography. The teachers read a lot from these books, and they focused on main ideas in the informational text. So let me give you an example. This is a new tool that we created. Instead of using the postcard from Study 1, we created a trifold. Do you all know why this is called a trifold? It's basically an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper that you can fold in thirds. And so what the kids are taught is, here's an information impression about this book on President Barack Obama. State Senator, U.S. State Senator, 44th President, first African American. Is that telling us about politics in Hawaii, important people in President Obama's life, or why President Obama is famous? Well, it doesn't really matter what the kids predict. What we want them to do is use those information impressions to make a prediction and then come back later and see if their prediction was correct. Then what we did is we actually developed comprehension questions for over 300 books in the Reads program. And so the kids are asked two questions, 1 and 2, that are literal question. And then they're always asked the main idea question. The main idea question is 3. What would be a good title for this passage? Barack Obama, our president, different jobs for people from California to New York, United States presidents. And then we asked the children question 4. This story was too easy, just right, or too hard. How much did you like this story? And hopefully what we want to see happen is that kids are engaged. Do you know what engagement means? It means that kids are able to understand the story, so they're able to accurately answer questions 1, 2, and 3. And they think the story was just right, wasn't too hard or too easy, and they really loved it or liked it. Excuse me. I've been having allergies, and so I apologize for the coughing. So let's continue. And let me explain to you what Bethany experiences and reads. This is Bethany. Remember, she gets her narrative book, her informational book. But then she gets this trifold. And hopefully what Bethany and all the kids in the study will do is they will complete the trifold. They will then answer the questions, and we're going to use this data to see if kids were engaged, if they could understand the books, and if they thought the books were just right, and they enjoyed reading these books. Yeah, good question I just got about kids who are below and above grade level. One of the things that we try to do is we try to pick we picked a comprehension routine that's really not done a lot in schools. We think that the story impressions activity, information impressions, is pretty novel. Part of the reason we know that is we did a lot of work in schools to see what happened at the end of the school year. And we just didn't see a lot of attention to main idea and the kind of things we saw. And the other thing that you don't always get during this in school is that a teacher, even if she's using, let's say, level text, can't always level the text precisely for each child. So what we did is we used a lot of different measures to do that. And so we think that if the texts themselves are reasonably well level and the kids have received lessons, that the reading that happens in the summer is well scaffolded for a range of readers. So this is the program theory for Reads with content-focused lessons. The teachers have reading comprehension lessons where they're teaching the kids how to complete that trifold, because that's our measure of engagement. We added a school family literacy event where parents are invited to the school and the teachers teach the children and the parents how to complete the trifold. And then what we do is we tell the kids to complete the trifold at home and mail it back to school. And what I'm going to show you today is whether there are long-term effects on the North Carolina end-of-grade test, which is given 9 months after kids return to school in the fall. The key question I want to answer for you now is a trifold the likely lever for improving reading comprehension. Does that little trifold that the kids are completing with each of their books, is that the thing that we can move to improve their comprehension? Because the trifold depends on the kind of lessons that occurred in school. So if there's good scaffolding, we're theorizing that kids are going to be able to better engage with their books, and that's what's going to lead to long-term reading comprehension gains. So in this longitudinal study, we started in the spring of 2013. Teachers implemented their lessons. There was a family night in the treatment group for the treatment group. In summer 2013, kids received their books and trifolds. They came back to school in the fall. They were in school in the winter. And then in the spring of 2014, they took the EOG test. Well, the first thing I want to tell you is that among the treatment group kids, about 64% of the kids returned at least one trifold. The mean number of comprehension items correct was about 7.5. I think this is really good news for education. Think about this, everyone. We're not paying kids to read. We're not giving them prizes. We're not doing anything other than trying to engage them in reading independently for the joy of reading. We're trying to create summer bookworms. And 2/3 of the kids participate in the program. Do you know in summer school programs, attendance is about 2/3 of the kids. So we're doing pretty well on the engagement side. So the main question is, 9 months after the intervention, what's the impact of reads on the North Carolina end of grade test in third and fourth grade? The answer is that there was a positive impact on broad comprehension. Do you all know what the impact of Success for All is in the most recent randomized controlled trial as part of the I3 program? It was 0.03, and it was not a statistically significant difference between the Success for All and the control group kids. And the RAND Corporation conducted a study of voluntary enrichment center-based programs in 6 districts, and that difference was 0.01, not statistically significant. The main thing that I'm trying to highlight here is it's very hard to improve broad comprehension outcomes. We shouldn't expect huge effects. But when you compare reads to these other evidence-based programs, we did pretty well. And the other thing about reads is that it's pretty affordable. We don't have center-based programs. We don't have to hire staff transportation. We wanted to make it cost-effective and scalable. I just got a question in the chat about how did you motivate the students to be engaged? Does this work for students who are not likely to be engaged? We think the answer to that is yes, because one of the things that kids also don't have an opportunity to do is there isn't a lot of choice and autonomy supports during the school year in terms of children's reading opportunities. They may get to take home books for the evening. There might be a brief moment in the class where they can self-select some reading activities. But when those kinds of activities occur, it's not clear that kids can own those texts, nor that they're picking texts that they can read. And so what we're trying to get right, if you think about the secret sauce in reads, is that we give kids an opportunity to actually own these books. They get to pick these 10 books. And we scaffold it with the trifold. And what that trifold really is capturing is the extent to which teachers are able to scaffold independent reading and motivate kids using a comprehension routine the kids would do on their own independently. So those are the ways that we try to engage kids. The other thing that we found in this research study is that when we look at the kids who are not motivated or very motivated or not engaged or very engaged, or good readers and poor readers, the effects of the program, the 0.04, it's pretty similar across those groups. We don't see any evidence of Matthew effects. Those of you who do work in literacy, you might be familiar with the term Matthew effects, which refers to the idea that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. We don't find any evidence of that. We found that the positive impact on broad comprehension was very robust across different subgroups of kids. Okay, let me continue. And I'm going to actually skip over this part. And I want to highlight this, that many interventions are black box evaluations. expectations. If I told you, assistant principals, hey, you got to find a way to improve your end of grade reading scores, you're all going to come back to me and say it's really hard for educators to improve distal outcomes like the end of grade reading test. But what if I told you we could find a lever that promotes higher reading scores and is easier for teachers to move? We'd all be really happy. Well, I think I found the lever. Remember the trifold? What if the increase in trifold was correlated with an increase in EOG scores? In fact, that's what we found. What we found is that when you look at the effects of reading engagement on reading comprehension and months of learning, for kids who return one trifold, that's about a quarter month of additional learning. Five trifolds, you're at 1.25 months. And for the kids who return 10 trifolds, that's like 2.5 additional months of learning. The point that I'm getting at here is that we think we've identified a lever that educators can actually move the trifold, which depends on the lessons, that is also highly predictive of end of grade reading comprehension. Okay.
Let me conclude with my third study. So how do you think we should bridge the research practice divide?
Well, the people who are experimental scientists would say, well, we have to replicate evidence-based practices with fidelity. Adaptation, if you adapt an evidence-based practice, that's infidelity. Improvement scientists will say,
you have to adapt evidence-based practice for local context. Every school is different. If you just emphasize fidelity, you get inflexibility. So let me show you this 2x2 grid. Notice that fidelity is on the vertical axis, it goes from low to high, and adaptation is on the x-axis, it goes from left to right, low to high. The people who do experimental science, like the Society of Research on Educational Effectiveness, I'm a part of that society, will say we need high fidelity and low adaptation because we want evidence-based practices to be implemented with fidelity. Improvement scientists will say, let's not focus on fidelity, let's focus on adaptation because context vary. What if you get low fidelity and low adaptation? You don't want to be there, then you get null results. But I'm going to argue that fidelity and adaptation are two dimensions of program implementation. If you look at reads being implemented or any evidence-based program, fidelity and adaptation co-occur. So in study three, we asked the question, can structure teacher adaptations enhance the impact of reads? We did this study in 27 high-poverty schools that were part of study two. And we randomly assigned the schools to implement core reads, which was a direct replication from the previous study too, or adaptive reads, where teachers could adapt the program. In core reads, the teachers did what we did before. They had a two-hour training. They had follow-up support from a partner community in schools. And we emphasized researcher knowledge, the knowledge we got from the RCTs. In adaptive reads, we drew on self-determination theory, and we wanted to support teachers' sense of relatedness to each other, the competence to implement the program, and their autonomy. So teachers worked in grade-level teams. They learned about the reads principles. We wanted to activate their own knowledge of practice, and they developed modifications. And what we found in the study is that adaptive reads teachers use more
homegrown strategies for the
family engagement. Remember, that's activity where we invite families to learn about reads in an after-school event. Adaptive reads, teachers were more likely to leave recorded phone messages, generate their own documents, use student sentence. We also found that fidelity of implementation was actually better in adaptive reads.
In adaptive reads, we found that a larger percentage of kids came to the family night than in the core reads program.
We gave a survey of summer reading to the kids to measure the will to read. Adaptive read students reported
reading more reads books. They also mailed more trifolds home, but back to school. And they answered more comprehension items
correctly on the trifolds. When we asked the question, does adaptive reads improve access to appropriately challenging books? The answer was yes. Adaptive reads children, 74% said the books were just right. Core reads was 67%. The reason is that we allow teachers to make adaptations to the books the children read based on knowledge that the teachers had about the children's reading levels. Okay, I'm almost at the end. What about the impact on reading comprehension? Remember the mission of Reads? It's to improve reading comprehension by fostering children's engagement with books over the summer. Did adaptive reads do better than core reads? Did adaptive reads do better than core reads?
in terms of reading comprehension. I'm going to speak up because Hunter just told me I need to, my voice is going in. I apologize again for the allergies. I'll speak up and get a little closer to my mic. So when we ask the question, does adaptive reads improve reading comprehension outcomes? The answer, everyone, is a resounding yes. Again, when we look at the y-axis, the effect size, that's the apples-to-apples comparison of a metric that we use in research. The children that adopt a read score nearly 12% of a standard deviation higher on average than children in core read. That's as large as the impact of reads versus a control group where kids get nothing. Bear in mind that in core reads, kids got the full reads program. The only difference is in how the teachers implemented the program. The effect size of 0.12 is enough to reduce the gap between middle and low income children in summer reading. In other words, the gap between middle and low income kids grows by about 0.12 standard deviations. And the adaptive reads program appears to have an impact that's as large enough to offset that gap. Over 10 years of research, what lessons did we learn in terms of cultivating summer bookworms through the Reads program? What is reading engagement is critical. Children are engaged with books when they are motivated to read them on their own and read in ways that increase their reading comprehension. What kinds of tools and reading activities can practitioners develop to foster reading engagement at home? One of the most important lessons from the Reads studies is that the trifolds, the postcards, which are the measures of reading engagement, depend on teacher scaffolding in the form of end of school year reading lessons. What I love about the Reads program is that it's good news about educators. It tells us that educators are critical to supporting children's reading activities outside of school. And the last thing that I want to say is summer loss is cumulative. Did you know that summer loss occurs not only after kindergarten, but also after first grade? It accumulates over time, and so we need long-term solutions in high-poverty schools. What the results from study 1, 2, and 3 suggest is that if your school is thinking about doing reads, you should think about starting with core reads, where you learn the program, you learn to do the program fidelity, and then in the second year, you do adaptive reads, where teachers are allowed to have structured adaptations built into the program so that it works better in their context. I am now, I believe, at about 3:40 Eastern Standard Time. I promised Hunter and Aaron that I would go about 40 minutes, and then I would do about 20 minutes of Q&A. I can type in my Zoom webinar chat box. I can also answer my questions, but I'm going to end here. I want to thank you all for listening to me. I hope the story of Reads was a story that there was a protagonist and an antagonist. The protagonist is Reads, the antagonist is summer loss. And that there were ups and downs, but ultimately you learned something that was helpful for your work. And again, I just want to close by saying, while I'm a professor at Harvard and I'm a literacy scholar, I do most strongly self-identify as a classroom teacher. So all of you in the audience today, you're very near and dear to my heart. And I thank you for all the great work you do with kids every day. Thanks, Aaron. I'm going to stop here.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kim. And I had a quick question because we have most of our assistant principals on. What could our assistant principals tell teachers to do about this summer reads and getting parents involved? The teachers can do all that they can and push this, and the assistant principals can push this program. But the key thing is we have to have parents who are held accountable. So do you have any advice on that?
It's a really great question, Aaron. I'll share two thoughts. One thought is I have a paper in Reading Teacher Magazine, which is a journal for educators. Any of the audience members could Google it. My co-author is Tom White. And what we did in that paper is we included the results from a couple of studies. And in the back, we included our postcards that we sent home to parents. And so one thing that you can do is even if you don't have a lot of money to buy books for kids, or doing some of the components of reads is too difficult given that there's a lot of things going on, we find that sending home simple activities like a postcard,
okay,
letter, can actually have a pretty big impact, as I showed you earlier. So these small nudges matter. The other thing that I want to share with you is everyone knows that we're now in the 21st century, and basically many, many parents have smartphones. We've been doing ongoing studies of summer reading even to this date. I haven't published those studies. But one thing that we've started to do more is we've started to use text to nudge parents. And it turns out that using simple text to nudge parents in simple ways like read for fun, so have an entertainment perspective about reading, can again have a big impact on parents' behaviors. We have a study that we did last year where we texted some parents and other parents we didn't text. And it looks like just the simple texting nudge and providing the books and resources can have a big impact on kids, particularly for those kids who are reluctant readers, who don't like to read, or who are not reading at all. So those are the two things that I would say, Aaron. I would say use a 20th century paper strategy and a 21st century digital strategy to engage parents.
Well, speaking on that strategy, now with kids interested in all these different books and they were unable to get books, is there electronic version of this that we could possibly get with everything, with, you know, technology the way that it is? Would it be an electronic version of this summer reads?
Boy, Aaron, you're asking me some really good, tough questions. But
I apologize. I'm just trying to put myself back in a system position. And knowing that the supply and demand, sometimes we don't have those books in the library, or students aren't able to get to the library in the summer. They travel and different things. And was just throwing it out there. But
it's a great question. So what I would tell you, Aaron, and our friends and colleagues who joined the webinar today, is my website, the Reads Lab, readslab.org. Reads Lab is the name of the lab that I run here at Harvard University. We're always developing new materials. And I've gotten your question a lot, Aaron. I've often gotten the question about, well, what if kids can't get books? And, you know, there's a lot of digital reading now. There's a lot of screen reading. What about kids who would go on vacation? So we do have in the works books that we are writing, that our lab is writing. We are going to make them digital. And we're gonna build the books around the three R's of digital reading. We're gonna try to feature a read aloud, retell, and reading activities. Okay. We are still developing those resources, but we do hope to have those available maybe within the next year. I'm sorry it's not gonna happen this month.
well, we just learned about the program, so we'll wait, definitely wait.
Yeah. I think I'm going to rely on Aaron and Honor to stay in touch with me, and, you know, in 6 months and 12 months, just ask me, hey, Jimmy, how's that going? And it may be, my response, maybe it's not done, but I am very committed to developing evidence-based programs and resources that are inexpensive or free and are scalable. So please stay tuned, because we are trying to develop some of those digital resources. In fact, our trifolds are all available as a PDF, so if any teacher wanted to use them, they could just download those. They're free. We don't charge. I really try to make this accessible to everyone. And we're trying to put those on an app. So we're also developing apps. But again, this is all so new to me that it's just taking more time than what I thought. So once we get some more digital assets up, we get an app built, we get digital books, I'll definitely let really important folks like, you know, Aaron and Honor and any National Association of Elementary School Principals, so that we can make the resources more widely available. Today, I think I just wanted to share the good news about, you know, reads and get the interest level up.
Great. So, Dr. Kim, let's go to the chat box. Honor, do you have any questions for Dr. Kim?
I do. Junanne Lewis writes, I am trying to get a summer reading program going at my school, but I have a challenge getting it started. Do you have any suggestions for how I may begin? Or, you know, what kind of strategies do you have for assistant principals as they try to start this program?
I'd love to learn more about your school, because one of the things that really encouraged the principals and the teachers whom I recruited for the research to participate in the research was the evidence of summer loss. So as you can tell by the studies I've shared, research is very hard. There's data collection, there's consenting, there's all of you who are assistant principals are probably going, yes, research is very hard and I do not like to do research. But one of the things about research is that when you create knowledge, it helps not just the people who did the research, but other people like you all. If I didn't do the research, I couldn't sit here saying this is evidence-based. But when I do presentations and reads to try to get summer reading programs going, what I show them is evidence of summer loss. So in these districts, they happen to give, in North Carolina, they have a formative assessment called MCLAS. Many of my assistant principals, I'm sure you use formative assessments to see who's on track, who's not on track to pass the third grade reading test, fourth grade test. Because those assessments are given at the beginning, middle, and end of year, we call them BOI, MOI, EOI, or fall, winter, and spring, you can just connect the dots and say, well, you know, my kids, kindergarten kids, at the end of year, where were they? And then in the fall of first grade, where were they? And you just connect the dots to third grade. And what we do when we do that is we often find that the dot from the spring to the fall goes down, but the dots from the fall to the spring during the school year are going up. So one of the first things you've got to do at your school is you have to frame the problem. You have to get people to think that there's a problem, because if there's no problem, then there's no demand for a solution. So again, I don't know a lot about your schools, but I do know that many schools use formative assessment data to track kids' reading progress, and I would connect the dots to see if summer loss is, in fact, a problem in reading. And, you know, if it's not, reads might not be the best program for you to work on. Maybe it's math. Maybe it's another domain. But if it is, which it is in many, many high-poverty schools, then you can motivate your colleagues to do the program. One of the things I did not share in my webinar that is important is when we did look at the effects of reads in North Carolina in the high poverty and moderate poverty schools, high poverty schools are where 75 to 100% of the children receive free lunch. It turns out that the largest impact of reads was at high poverty schools.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
This is all of my papers. If you all, Aaron, I don't know if you and Honor want to look up my papers, but I have them at the end of this webinar. Anyone can find them on Google. If you look at my papers, I go into a lot more detail. But basically, summer learning loss and reading is a serious problem in schools serving low-income children. So those are my two things. Look at your assessment data. And if your demographics are such that you have a lot of low-income kids, or you have low-income kids in particular that you can serve through Title I funding, let's say, that's where you want to be targeting the program.
Can I ask another question? Can you share, Dr. Kim, some of the challenges schools have had in implementing the program and, like, what they did to kind of overcome them? Just some stories on that.
Excellent question. I think one of the hardest things about reads is that people – forget about summer learning loss because it's something that is perceived as happening outside of school. And what they're focusing on is the school stuff. I have a new social emotional learning program. I have a new math program. One of the hardest barriers to getting reads started and sustaining reads is that people lose attention and focus because they don't think it's their responsibility to deal with problems outside of school. So the way that we've tried to help schools embrace the program is the first thing is what I came back to earlier, that much of the achievement gap between low-income and middle-income kids at the end of elementary grade is due to what happens in outside of school. And so we have to realize that the broader achievement gap that we are struggling to address, to mitigate, to eliminate, is originating outside of school in the summer months. And we have to remember that. The other thing that I'd say, Hunter, is that under ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act, you are probably familiar with the four tiers of evidence. Is everyone going, yes, four tiers of evidence? Well, in the ESSA tier structure, the first tier, the top tier, so think of like the gold medal, goes to programs that are evidence-based because they've been tested through a rigorous randomized controlled trial. Every study of REEDS has been a randomized controlled trial. It has not been a study where someone's just describing something good that happened to kids. There's been random assignment, a fair evaluation, a fair comparison group. And so the other thing, Hunter, that is very helpful is if you're using Title I funding, if you're using state funding, if you have to convince your local school board that you're investing in an evidence-based program, they're going to come back to you and say, well, is it a tier one? Does it meet the tier one ESSA standards? And I can tell you for REEDS, every single study would meet the tier one standards. So I think it's very, very important to emphasize that this is an evidence-based program. It's been conducted using very rigorous experimental methods. And that means a lot today in the 21st century because of the federal ESSA legislation.
Wonderful. Thank you. I think my last question anyway on this is, in terms of setup, if a school wanted to start this, and you said to go through the core REEDS first, but what strategies would you recommend for that? Should it be teachers or should it be principals, or what, you know, how do people actually do the startup normally?
It's a top-down and bottom-up approach, Honor. What I have found is that an administrator, like an assistant principal, has to be a fan of the program and say, you know, we're doing 100 things this year, and this is 101, but this is a top priority, so let's be all in. And you need a bottom-up strategy. You need at least two teachers who are on board. What I found is that if it's just one teacher who wants to do the program, they're too isolated. They don't have a colleague that they can work with to troubleshoot. If you do REEDS and it's only teachers, they don't have the necessary administrative support to say, hey, we need $50 to have an after-school family literacy night and pizza. You know, the people who control the purse strings, the Title I funds, the school budget, those are the assistant principals, the principals. So those teachers really need top-down support. But the folks at the top, you all who are assistant principals, you can't do the program. You can't teach the lessons. You need to depend on the teachers. So my recommendation is we want to have fidelity with core REEDS. And so at minimum, you've got to have a team of teachers, at minimum two, and an administrator who's all in, who can provide administrative support, who can provide maybe some leftover Title I funding for a pizza party at the after-school event, or maybe to order some books. But what you can't do is just have a lone ranger who's excited. You can't have just one teacher or one principal. It's got to be a top-down, bottom-up, at least two teachers, at least one administrator. The thing that we've noticed with REEDS is that the program kind of sells itself. When schools do it for 1 year and they see the kids engaged and they see the kids coming back, talking to their teachers about what they read, the more teachers want to be involved. Then the principal takes it to the superintendent and says, hey, I put in $50. Can you match this? So I believe that what we have to do as educators is we're just gardeners. We have to till the soil. And REEDS is like a small mustard seed. You till the soil, it grows, and eventually it can grow into this big mustard tree. But you got to start small. I believe in starting small, and you have to till the soil. But unless you've got the bottom-up, you know, support from at least two teachers and the top-down support from at least one administrator, that seed is not going to grow.
Great answer. Now, I have a personal question myself. Just going back to my experience when I was assistant principal, and I was at schools that, majority of schools, the students were below basic in reading. Now, could you give us any type of, strategy towards incentive? Because we have to incentivize most of the things because, kids don't like to read below. They feel inferior and different things of that sort. Do you know any type of strategies that principals could share with their teachers to possibly incentivize reading over the summer? I know when we were at our school, we had kids to read a certain amount of books and they could get some school bucks. When they come back to school, they use these school bucks and they can purchase pencils, paper, and different things. But I know you probably had something more creative than what we had.
Well, Aaron, we actually, I've done about 10 different RCT, randomized controlled trials to reads, but one of my studies is what happens when you pay kids to read? And it's all about what you just described. I'm not going to give the punchline away. Folks can look it up. But I'll tell you my answer from the perspective of a researcher, a teacher, and a parent. I think what we should do for reluctant readers is we should incentivize reading. And so what I mean by that is imagine that you're a Title I school. You don't have a lot of money. You have a lot of starting readers. You can say something like, Jimmy, I'm gonna, you know, we just done some lessons. You can pick one of these books. And you know what? If you return that postcard or trifold, you can pick another book. So my suggestion is we want kids to be engaged and read for the sake of reading, not for something extrinsic to reading.
Right.
And ultimately, the challenge we face with struggling readers, the kids who can't decode, is that they only want to read for something other than reading because they hate to read. That's the problem.
Right.
But if we continue to give them extrinsic motivators, it's not going to help them later in schooling or in life. What's going to help them is they realize that reading lets you travel space and time. Reading opens up new worlds. Reading is fun. Reading is a source of entertainment. And the things that I've just said are supported by research. I believe it's what most parents would want for their children. I have three children. One of my kids isn't a struggling reader, but he's a very reluctant reader. He does not pick up things on his own. Unfortunately, to my great dismay, he reads way too much Captain Underpants. And as a teacher, I would want my kids to read because if they read a lot and they love to read, they can acquire a lot of knowledge. And we know that knowledge is also critical to a good life, to participating in our democracy, to successfully joining our economy. So I guess my takeaway on that question, Aaron, is let's have a long-term view of this problem and not try to come up with quick fix solutions. That is a bit like giving kids, you know, candy. Does candy help you survive? Yeah, but it's just empty calories. And instead, can we find creative ways to incentivize reading? And I think that any kid would love to choose another book to read. So let's just keep getting kids to read and read a lot. And if we can do that, then we can do what this webinar was titled, Create Summer Bookworms.
Well, great advice, Dr. Kim. I really appreciate that answer to the question. On behalf of NAESP, we'd like to thank you, Dr. Kim, for this Assistant Principals webinar series. I want to thank my partner behind the scenes, Honor Feedy. We also want to thank our Executive Director, Dr. Earl Franks, and our Associate Executive Director of Professional Learning, Gail Morgan. Again, my name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. I want to at this time show Dr. Kim's information. So if you want to download or email him, it should be on the screen. Dr. Kim, I'll let you have the closing remarks on this webinar series.
Yes, thanks, Aaron. Honor just asked if I could show the last slide. And I'm showing the last slide because if you click on any of these links, you can read the papers that I referred to today. And if you go to my publication site, you can find the studies on things, on topics I mentioned today. Like, what happens if you pay kids to read? We actually have a study.
Oh, great.
As I said, I always love talking to educators. You know, I'm a professor, but I'm at heart, I'm a classroom teacher. And now with three young children, this is all very dear to my hope. I want to wish Aaron and Honor a really great spring, and to all of you who joined today, whose faces I cannot see, I thank you for joining me and hope that this was helpful. And again, thank you for all your efforts with kids around the United States and Canada.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kim, and hopefully we'll have you back soon for some more updates on this summer learning session.
Great. Thanks, Aaron.
All right. Have a good one and catch you at the next Assistant Principals Webinar Series.